from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Pictures of Santa Rosa's Coffee Park became some of the most memorable images from the devastating North Bay wildfires in October. The middle-class neighborhood lost more than 1,300 homes. And as part of Forum's series on rebuilding after the fires, we take a close look at Coffee Park as construction begins on the first house to be rebuilt since the Tubbs Fire tore through the subdivision. We want to hear from people who lost their homes in the state's recent fires. How are you coping and what are your plans? Call us now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Coming up next, stay with us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 1,300 homes burned down in the Coffee Park neighborhood in Santa Rosa in the wildfires that devastated the North Bay in October. Now, as some residents start the process of rebuilding, others are deciding whether they can afford to stay. And joining us to talk about rebuilding Coffee Park are Jeff Okrepke. He's president and chairman of Coffee Strong. It's a neighborhood association formed to help Coffee Park rebuild. He was a renter in Coffee Park, lost his home to the fire. And Jeff Okrepke, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thank you very much.
And Robert Digital also joins us. He's a reporter with the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat. We'll get an overall picture from him. Thank you for joining us, Robert Digital.
Thank you.
And we also have with us David Guillen, who is Director of Planning and Economic Development and Assistant City Manager for the City of Santa Rosa. And we welcome you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad to have all of you. And let's start, if we can, with you, Robert Digital, and get kind of an overview. I know there was an acute housing shortage before the Tubbs Fire. You lost about 5% of the housing stock in that. And the city wants to expand the types of housing it's going to be offering. They want to replace as well as expand. And there's a whole change in terms of permit process. Can you update us on all this? I mean, housing priorities and all that, what's happening?
Well, I can give you a little bit of an overview. The city has long had a shortage both of rental and owner-occupied housing. What we've seen is I'm blanking out here, Michael. I apologize.
Let me give you a little more of a catalyst, I think, if you need it. But go ahead.
Please.
Well, I'm just wondering where you are now. I mean, if you can give us an overview. I know there's been a lot of concern about making exemptions. There's been all kinds of things trying to go on to rebuild. So at this point, I know the mayor said he doesn't want to see things just go back to the way it was 5 years before 2017 in terms of the market. What's being done?
Well, my focus has been more on what the community is doing. I think David can talk to you a little bit more about the city policy, but we are at a place where the debris cleanup is pretty much complete for Coffee Park. They're hoping to have that done within the next week or so. Builders are getting ready to rebuild. Homeowners there are considering their options. So there is a real effort underway. There are still very big questions about how many people will rebuild, how many will decide to sell, how many will be able to build within 2 years, which is a very important deadline because after 2 years, most insurance companies stop paying the rent for temporary housing. So after 2 years, a fire survivor could be in a place of needing to build and pay a mortgage and a rent. So there's still very big questions about how successful the rebuild will be, but there's a great need out there, you're correct, and there's a great effort underway now to try and bring more housing to the city.
Well, you mentioned the cleanup went along pretty well. There was a good deal of controversy over that because there was a decision people could use FEMA or not use FEMA and have to hire somebody or do it by themselves, but it all worked out well. For the most part, I mean, you've achieved what needed to be achieved in terms of the cleanup?
Well, I think there's still some controversy about that, but the vast majority of people in Coffee Park chose to use the public process. Some in other areas of the county have chosen to do it on their own. But the process, while it's had fits and starts, for the most part, I think most people that I've talked to have felt that the public process was the best answer for them.
And at this point, well, actually, let me bring you in, Jeff Okrepke, because Jeff Okrepke and his group, Coffee Strong, have done a lot in terms of bringing the neighborhood together. I mean, this was a neighborhood that was, for the most part, middle class, affordable. 43% were renters. You were a renter yourself and then wound up losing your house, I know. And the general sense that you get, Jeff, in terms of people who want to stay or who want to leave and how things are moving ahead.
It's difficult to put a number on it or even try to. There's varying aspects of a decision-making process with this that come into play. So the ones that we're seeing leave already are typically the ones that were empty nesters, were planning to downsize before. One of my neighbors was planning to go to Costa Rica in the near future, and this fire just made the decision for her. When it gets into the gray area is how much money people are going to have to rebuild. And what that process is going to look like. There's ways to rebuild for everybody, but it comes down to what that financial situation looks like at the time of rebuilding and then going forward if they have to get a loan or a mortgage or what have you. And then also the emotional and mental bandwidth that these individuals have to put into this process. Because you're talking about people that are displaced, they have full-time jobs, they have like, many of them have families. And so that's going to come into play as to, do I need to fully undertake this rebuilding process on my own and can I do it, or should I just take as much money as I can and find another option for housing? Because many of these people are already in a place where they're renting, and so they could choose to stay there and then take the cash out of selling their land and their insurance.
But you got some big questions about insurance, don't you? I mean, that's one of the things that your group has had to tackle.
Yeah, this is a situation I've told people that if you look at us in terms of natural disasters, that kind of we've never really seen this in the United States. If you look at hurricanes and floods and earthquakes, there's insurance coverage for that, but they're optional and they're expensive. So a lot of people choose not to get those. And so when the disasters happen in those areas, a lot of time you'll see eminent domain come into play where the government will give them, you know, fair market value for their land and then clear it themselves and sell it off or develop it as they see fit. Whereas in this situation, if anybody has insurance, fire is a covered cause of loss. So now I think it's over $10 billion in covered losses within Sonoma County. So you're talking about $10 billion of hard cash money coming into the county, which brings its own issues as to people who want a piece of that $10 billion. But it also complicates it because now everybody who had insurance has the opportunity to rebuild to some extent, and it makes it much more difficult for the city and the community to realize that that rebuild process because it does complicate it.
Well, it's also complicated by a lot of the challenges that you have. I mean, I know labor is short, especially framers. Where to put labor, general contractors. I mean, there's certainly a lot of challenging problems, to put it mildly, still, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a labor shortage before this, and not just in construction, but in most industries within Sonoma County, part of that being just the cost to live in Sonoma County and the surrounding areas. And then when you look at contractors specifically, pretty much if you talk to any builder or any subcontractor, they said anybody that was reliable that can work was already employed. And they were – you drive around Santa Rosa and there's help wanted signs everywhere. So you take that and then you take the aspect that any subcontractor for building a house can operate year-round for the most part and do other aspects of construction, whether it be electricians, plumbing, concrete, what have you. There is only one subcontractor that is reliant on new construction, and that's framers. And maybe David could speak to it, but I think it was somewhere around 300 homes a year was the average, 300 new homes a year in Santa Rosa. And now you're talking about thousands, and the framers weren't there. The framers just aren't there anymore because there was not enough work to maintain a framing business to compete with multiple framing businesses in Santa Rosa. And so now we've got to find those framers, and then we've got to find the labor for them to use. And it's just, it's daunting to look into, look that far.
Well, let me look at it with you, David Guin, if I can. David Guin, excuse me, who's Director of Planning and Economic Development, Assistant City Manager, City of Santa Rosa. Where are the framers going to come from?
That's a great question, and it's something that Jeff alluded to, that before the fire, we had a housing crisis, and we were in the same situation, just trying to get up to our goal of about 800 to 1,000 units a year, and really we were only seeing about 300 come in. That was due to laborers, specifically framers and other labor issues. We also had some financing issues out there in terms of projects getting the proper financing. So a lot of issues at stake. So the city is looking to try to find ways to support the development and encourage housing development in Santa Rosa. And I think your first question touched on that is we need to rebuild. We need to rebuild this the areas that were lost as quick as possible to keep our community here and to retain our sense of community and our workforce. But we also need to build new houses, and we need to do that in a very responsible way. And so there's a big push right now to look at our downtown core, increase our density downtown, look at transit-oriented development and a different type of product for people that want to live here and continue to work here in the Santa Rosa region.
Does that mean things like, I know there's been a lot of controversy around it, like stores and dog parks and senior housing plans and so forth?
Well, so we're looking at we want to help these communities rebuild. We want to rebuild these communities to where they were just 3 months ago, bring them back, support the vision of the people that own those properties. But also parallel to that, we want to look at where density should occur, which is in our downtown core. And so that's an area where we're going to focus on as well as rebuilding. So we want to do both. We want to add new housing stock, but find a way to bring this community back. And you know, the city's been looking at different ways to do that. Part of it's changing policies to speed up the process. We've opened up a new permit counter specifically for people that lost their homes. We have a dedicated counter, dedicated staff just for the rebuild. So we've seen over 1,100 people come through that office since the end of November, and we've already issued 8 permits. And there are 5 of those in Coffee Park. So things are underway.
Well, you got a house that's underway, period, right? One house?
We do, yeah. Yeah, one is under construction. And I think we were just talking before the show that the first few houses that are coming through, we're learning a lot. I think us as the city, the community, the press, the people, the contractors, the developers, we've never been through something like this, so it's unprecedented, and it's going to take unprecedented action to get us out of this. And so we're trying new things, we're pushing the envelope, we're asking the community and everyone to come together, and people have.
And what about affordable housing? I mean, Coffee Park was a unique community. There were, for the most part, a lot of starter homes, but affordable rents. Firemen live there, police officers, mm-hmm. teachers, government workers, insurance salesmen, so forth. I mean, is there going to be an attempt to do something similar and replicate that, or even make it more affordable for those in perhaps a less economic prosperous area?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And I think you know, Jeff talked about this as well, is there's one of the issues in rebuilding is there's a gap in terms of what the insurance cover will cost. And so we don't want to lose people because of that. And so one thing that the city can do is try to figure out where we can reduce costs, speed the process up, get people back in their homes without adding additional burden. Obviously, we have new state codes we have to comply with, but there's other things that we can work around and try to figure out how to reduce the cost. Anything we can do to help people rebuild and stay here, such as you mentioned, teachers and mechanics and firefighters, everyone that we need here in our community. And then the second part of your question is absolutely when we do new construction, specifically in our downtown core, we will be looking at how to integrate affordable housing as part of that. That's something that the city is very interested in, looking for incentives, working with HUD, working with other nonprofits to identify funding sources to incorporate affordable housing as we develop new housing and market rate housing. We have to have both.
We're talking, if you just joined us, with Jeff Digitale, Robert Digitale, excuse me, and Robert Digitale is with the director of the excuse me, Barbara Digitale is a reporter. I'm going to go to in a moment with the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. But with us is David Guyon. That's who you're hearing from, Director of Planning and Economics with Development and Assistant City Manager in Santa Rosa. Still some big questions here. And let me go to you on this, Robert Digitale. I mean, utilities and sewers and sidewalks, I mean, lots of things come to mind here that have to be dealt with and have to be dealt with pretty immediately, don't they?
Well, they do have to figure them out. Pacific Gas and Electric was able to put up, restore power to Coffee Park with street lights and electric overhead poles. But that system needs to be put underground. It needs to be done with other utilities. And there's still a lot of question about how that's going to hook up with everybody's homes. So, yes, the contractors and the homeowners are all waiting to hear, how are you going to do this? It's one of the many questions that has to be figured out.
And again, Robert Digitale is with the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. And Jeff Okrepke is president and chair of Coffee Strong, a neighborhood association to help Coffee Park rebuild. You got a lot of residents who are pretty organized here, Jeff, and I want to talk about that with you for a moment. But organized to do what? To keep construction costs down and to pay what is at least covered by insurance and make sure that there's a kind of unity of solidarity here?
Well, it all started with just information, is making sure people get the right information so that they're not making choices that'll cost them time or money. And then it's evolved into sort of a resident advocacy group where it's power in numbers. So we have about 950 people on our mailing list now that we vet through addresses. And it's become a situation where we've gone as far as being able to identify which floor plans each house had, and we're gathering insurance carrier information so that we can do things like send an email out to individuals that say, you have, you know, floor plan A and insurance company Y. Do you guys want to work together to make sure you're getting the same cost per square foot estimates that everybody else is getting in with your floor plan, so that they can it's power in numbers. And also,
are you lobbying City Hall? You find yourself
that does help too. When you do have about 950 people behind you and you call City Hall, whether it be policymakers or staff, they tend to not that they weren't responsive before, but they, you know, they know that it's not one individual on a corner saying, hey, here's my specific situation. It's, hey, what are you doing about these 950 people in this area? So and they also, conversely, they know that it's a way for them to pass down information so that they can get information to us and we can get it out in an efficient manner to our residents so that people are kept as up to date as possible on what's going on with the city and policymaking.
Well, let me go back to David Guyon here. And again, he is Assistant City Manager of Santa Rosa. I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, David, but because I think it's hard to understand, but there are a lot of exemptions here for developers, especially on density. And it's allowing for more incentives, and it's allowing, frankly, for more building. Can you kind of at least give us a sketch of what's going on?
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember there's two different issues going on. One is the rebuild effort, and then the second is the new build. The rebuild effort is really dictated by the current land and the current land use and what's allowable. So this area that was impacted, specifically Coffee Park, is a residential area. This is typically a single-family home zoning, and that's what the type of unit that's going to go back. The one aspect to that is that we have put policies in place to encourage and allows accessory dwelling units, which is essentially a granting unit or a second unit. And that's something that statewide we're looking at as a potential solution to our housing crisis. And so as people rebuild their unit, we're looking at how can we facilitate that? Can we reduce fees? Can we help the process? Can we speed it up and allow them to have potentially a rental property on there along with their single family home? So that's about as far as it goes in terms of density for the rebuild. As far as new building in our downtown core and other areas of Santa Rosa, absolutely we're looking at density bonus and other things that we can encourage increased density to maximize the use of our land to generate the needed housing that we need in our community.
You're talking about a state law that permits density bonuses up to 100% beyond the present zoning rules, and you're going that high,
correct,
potentially?
Yeah. Yeah, we're looking at that. We actually have a draft version of that policy out on the street right now for review and comment. But we are looking at certain areas of our town to have a 100% density bonus, which specifically, again, in our downtown near transit, near our new smart train that is in Santa Rosa. Again, where the community has already identified areas in Santa Rosa where we want to have density, where you can walk to transit, where you don't necessarily need a car. That's where it's appropriate, and that's where we're going to be looking at encouraging that type of
the greatest capacity to handle. In other words, access.
Absolutely. Yeah, trying to get people out of their cars and reduce greenhouse gases and increase our economic vitality in our downtown core. All of these are key elements to a sustainable community that we need to develop. But not losing sight of the fact that we have a big part of our workforce and our community that we need to help rebuild at the same time. So as our mayor famously said early on, is we need to walk and chew gum at the same time. And that's, I think, something we're keeping an eye on as we move forward, is to rebuild, but also think creatively and build in creative and innovative new ways.
I think that originally goes back to Gerald Ford. Lyndon Baines Johnson said it about Gerald Ford. I want to give the credit where credit is due, but we'll have your mayor at least having said it as well. And you have some things you want to say about this rebuilding effort, or questions you want to ask, because we do want to hear from you, and I want to open the phone lines and invite you to join us, those of you who are listening. And obviously you don't have to be in the Coffee Park area, or what was the Coffee Park area, to be concerned about this. There are questions certainly that apply to many people who have suffered as a result of these wildfires and who have concerns, and they're doing a lot up in Coffee Park. One of the big questions that remains is how many people will stay, how many people will go, and what kind of circumstances can really compel people to want to stay and want to join the effort that's going on there as opposed to leaving. I'd like to hear from you, our listeners, and bring your thoughts to the conversation here, as well as any questions or comments you might have. And let me tell you how you can do that. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your involvement, so feel free to join us. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, posting questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You can also post anything you want on our Facebook page. Let me remind you that we're talking with Jeff Okrepke. He's president and chair of Coffee Strong. They're a neighborhood association formed to help Coffee Park rebuild. He was a renter in Coffee Park, lost his home to the fire. Robert Digital is also with us. He's a reporter with the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat. And David Guillen, who is director of planning and economic development and assistant city manager in the city of Santa Rosa. We do want you to join us, and we will welcome you as soon as we come back from a quick brief break here. But let me read some comments that are coming in already. Shannon says, I just pulled in a Home Depot in Cupertino to buy a little space heater. I see around 30 workers hanging around the parking lot looking for work. It would be nice to link them with folks in charge of rebuilding in Napa and Santa Rosa. Also, what about prefab housing, tiny homes? Well, again, these are suggestions that have come up before and came up right after the fires. Good to hear yours, though, Shannon, and we'll hear from others when we return. Let me just read what Thomas has to say. I lived in the Hopper Lane apartments in Santa Rosa. My apartment was destroyed. It took 3 months to settle my claim. Little has been said about mobile homes and apartments. To add insult to injury, Hopper Lane evicted the surviving residents. Starting over at 73 is not fun. We'll hear from more of you when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Coffee Park and the efforts that are going on to rebuild that community, which was set ablaze in the wildfires that spread through the north part of, well, Santa Rosa, Sonoma, Napa, but really almost destroyed that particular community. And with us is Jeff Okrepke. He's president and chair of Coffee Strong, a neighborhood association that's formed to help Coffee Park rebuild. He was a renter in Coffee Park, lost his home to the fire. Robert Digital is a reporter with the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat, and David Guillen is the director of planning and economic development, assistant city manager of the city of Santa Rosa. David, are we going to see more public hearings? And can you at least include that in the information that we're disseminating here?
Yes, we're reaching out in a variety of different ways. One, we have public town hall meetings, which we just had last weekend. We have updates at our city council every Tuesday night about the recovery during our staff briefings. That's Tuesday night at 5 o'clock. The other great resources, SonomaRecovers.org. We post all of our information about town hall meetings, outreach meetings, but SonomaRecovers.org is a great location to find information that the city and county have collaborated on to get information out to the public.
And Jeff Kripke, I'd like you to get some information out to the public about what happened around Christmas time in Coffee Park. It's a pretty inspiring and moving story.
Yeah, it all started with a sheriff's deputy who was driving through Coffee Park at night, and he saw a guy walking around putting lights on the street signs and light poles, and he said, "What are you doing?" And this gentleman, Ronnie Duvall, just said, "Just trying to bring a little cheer to the area. Is that not okay?" And he said, and the sheriff responded, "No, that's great." And the story started to kind of snowball, and Ronnie started getting donations from Interstate Battery and then the Engineering Contractors Association up here, who is responsible. A lot of their members are responsible for the cleanup as the subcontractors, like Team Gelati, Gelati Construction, Argonaut Constructors. Started donating more money, and it basically turned into a Christmas-type festival where we had like a 19-teens flatbed Ford truck giving hay rides. There was a Santa. There was food trucks. There was different, like a Christmas tree court, a candy cane court. V. Dolan Trucking went up to Tahoe and brought back a bunch of snow and dumped it in one of the courts so kids could throw snowballs at each other. And then we had some Christmas tree farms that donated Christmas trees, and people were able to decorate their lots and put Christmas trees up and lights and just kind of feel that Christmas spirit again. Because one of the issues that I don't think a lot of people really realize is that when you get into the holiday spirit, there's like this process of getting everything out of the garage and going through it, and where are we going to hang this? And you know, a lot of that stuff, especially like ornaments, are old family heirlooms. So like for my family, we had like baby's first Christmas and those kind of things. And everybody lost those because it was October and most of that stuff was packed away in the garage. And no one, at least to my knowledge, no one was thinking about Christmas when they were evacuating their homes and what they could and the stuff they could bring with them. And so we had a situation where we didn't get into the holiday spirit because people were displaced, whether it be in hotels or rentals, and didn't have that sort of a thing. And now we had a situation where we could come together as those that are all in the same emotional and mental space and be together and just celebrate Christmas as survivors and displaced families and kind of retake our community spirit, our holiday spirit, and our lots, our homes as our own during Christmas time.
Yeah, it's certainly a lovely story, and thank you for that. I want to go to our callers. Before I do, let me go to you, Robert Digital. And Robert Digital, again, is a reporter of the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat. Just from talking to people in the community, as I'm sure you've done as a reporter, what's your sense? Most of them, we talked about this once before, after the fires, most of them are going to stick it out with that kind of spirit we just heard Jeff talk about, feeling that they need to rebuild and need to stay?
I think that a majority of them will, yes. I do think there were some people besides the factor of the difficulty of rebuilding, there was also the trauma of what they went through. Some of them barely escaped with their lives. And so that trauma isn't something that easily goes away. But I think most of them have decided that this is their home, this is where they want to rebuild, this is where they want to be part of the community. And if I could just add, you know, Michael, I think there's some precedent for this in our community. The 1906 earthquake was like a defining moment for Santa Rosa. Just as it clobbered San Francisco, it leveled a good deal of the downtown. And in the same way, these wildfires are sort of the defining moment of our era. They are, you know, historians will debate which one had a greater impact on Santa Rosa. But this has been the sort of the 1906 earthquake of our era, and we are living through it.
And let me bring some of our callers in. We'll begin, Drew, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I've been in real estate finance for a long time, and a lot of people may not be aware that when you have a loan on any kind of property, the lender is the first loss payee, and the minimum fire coverage has to be the loan balance. And many who cannot afford more are underinsured or have no insurance beyond the balance of their loan. So when the building is destroyed, the loan is paid off, but they get no net proceeds to help rebuild because they didn't have insurance coverage beyond that. So they end up with a free and clear lot, and that's one of the reasons I'm sure that there are a lot of for sale listings popping up on lots, because in spite of Christmas spirit and will to want to rebuild, it comes down to the money. And even if they can get a big enough loan to pay for the new construction, can they afford to carry that? And then I had a question as to...
Let me actually, before you bring in your question, Drew, I want to go back to Robert Digitale on that. I mean, she's right. There are a lot of lots up for sale now in Coffee Park, aren't there?
There are some. There are more up in the Fountain Grove community, but we are going to be watching how many there will be. Underinsurance has been a big issue for California wildfires for more than a decade. Talking with survivors of the Cedar Fire in 2003, they were saying so many of them were underinsured. That doesn't necessarily mean we're not going to see rebuilding here. There is that big question, how are insurance companies going to treat fire survivors? We're waiting to see, but there is certainly a determined effort on the part of Coffee Park residents and others to work with their insurance companies to get a settlement that will allow them to rebuild.
Oh, Drew, you had another point, please.
Well, yes, I was going to say I've never seen insurance companies pay out more than what they were obligated to. But we inherited a place out in Fountain Grove, a townhome that didn't burn, and we were in the process of and still are in the process of moving up there. So I'm kind of aware of what's going on up there. And one of my curiosities is what so far has been implemented at the city or county level as to new standards being more to the spirit of fire resistance, setbacks increased between buildings or whatever. I mean, the lots in Coffee Park are pretty small compared to Fountain Grove, and the demographics of the wealth of those people in those two different neighborhoods is also pretty dissimilar. So,
yeah, you make some good points. Let me go to you on this, Director Guillen.
Yeah, so the question about rebuilding and fire, how we're looking at the fire, I guess basically it's resistance. A lot of these homes, especially in the Fountain Grove area, were built before we had our wildland urban interface policy in place. That policy now is in place and that boundary has been identified, and that it does include the Fountain Grove area. And that requires a different type of building. I mean, it dictates the roofing materials, the venting that's needed, siding, setbacks, clearances, vegetation management. There's a lot to it to try to deal with wildfires. And as every natural disaster we have, and in our area we have floods, earthquakes, and wildfires, we learn over time and implement new codes and regulations based on what we learn. One of the things that we had in this situation was an intense wind that we're looking at what does that mean and how do we work with that. But absolutely anything built now will have to be built to new code standards, which is the new building code standards, which has fire sprinkler requirements. But also if you're in this wildland urban interface, there's additional fire-resistant building methods that are required. And on top of that, we are entertaining a lot of interesting conversations with people that are proposing fire-resistant building materials, different construction methods. We're going to work those through our process, evaluate those, and work with people that want to use that for their home building process.
And she's right, though, about just the general cost of living and economic status of Fountain Grove as opposed to Coffee Park. But there, as I understand it, David, about 250 new homes in Fountain Grove. Is that right? Do you know?
I mean, in terms of new...
That are going to go
what
up.
Was the question?
Yeah.
Well, we lost in Fountain Grove alone, we lost very similar to the same number that we lost in the Coffee Park area, so about 1,300 homes that were lost in the Fountain Grove area. So we are looking at working with homeowners to replace those. There is
all of
interest
them?
In developing... Whoever wants to rebuild, right? If people, again, it's individual private property. We are supporting people that want to rebuild, but again, to building to the new codes with fire resistant requirements, and we'll be working with them as they go through the process.
And we'll work with another caller. It's Will from Santa Rosa. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. Thank you very much for holding this call. So I'm one of the fire victims that lost my home and just barely escaped with my two young kids and my wife through the flames. And so as I'm debating about whether I do rebuild or not, I have two sort of questions in my mind that I need to get answered. One is an early warning system. So what I imagine would make sense is having small telemetry devices and every telephone pole in Santa Rosa, which I imagine would be minimal in cost given the cost of those devices, that provides an alarm because relying on knocks on doors for neighbors obviously isn't going to be the best way to evacuate. And if I rebuild, I'm okay with losing my house again to another wildfire, but I definitely want to make sure I have warning so I'm not driving out through flames. So that's the first thing I want to get an understanding from the city in terms of, will they have those telemetry devices and not rely on a phone that gets turned off at night because I don't want to get text messages in the middle of the night, or a knock on the door where, especially when you're living in a country setting with a long driveway, might be very difficult. So that's my first objective. And my second objective is to be able to find ways to build at a less costly rate. So I wanted to understand, will there be help buying nails in bulk, prefab walls, not the whole structure, but just an 8x10 wall in bulk so that folks can make sure that they keep their costs low? What sort of building materials will be bought en masse to be able to make sure that folks can have materials at rates that aren't going to be exorbitantly high?
Oh, well, many thanks for those questions. Let me go back to you, David Guin. Are we talking, first of all, about telemetric devices, warning devices on poles?
Yeah, I think the caller brings up a question that's been is on the top of everyone's mind is notification, and I think that's something that we're actively engaging not just Santa Rosa, but our county partners, our regional partnerships, and statewide on what that type of notification looks like. With any notification, it's important to look at both using technology, but understanding that in a disaster, technology could fail. And so what is the backstop? What is the approach that we're going to put in place? To be honest, the knocking on doors, the way that our community came together, the people looking out for each other, that's a critical piece of a response. And building those communities, making sure those communities are strong and they have the resources they need is something that we're also looking at. So the caller brings up a good point. It is being looked at.
Are you looking at nails and building materials, MS, the way he...
So, I think on the construction side, I think two things. One thing we're seeing is developers are pulling together and actually working to sign up multiple people and having multiple developments happen, or multiple houses built at the same time. What that does is that you get an economy of scale. So the developer then could buy things in bulk, have labor and guarantee work for a certain period of time. So there's value in having multiple houses done by one developer, and there's quite a few of those efforts underway. And Jeff may be able to talk about that a little bit as well, that he's working to pull those developers together and give people that resource so people know who they can work with, combine resources, and try to get the best leverage out of working together as a team.
Let me thank Will for his call. And Will, I'm sorry about you losing your home. Jeff, do you want to comment on that, what was just brought up by David?
Yeah. The one thing I do want to comment on first, though, is in regards to the fire, just what a freak occurrence it was. A lot of people compare it to the Hanley fire in the early 60s because it had generally the same path. But while the Hanley fire took 5 days to get from its ignition point to basically the bottom of Fountain Grove, it took 5 hours for the Tubbs fire to do that. So these 70-mile-an-hour winds, those were ground level. I think the peaks, sometimes they measured them closer to the 90s or 100s and the peaks of the hills. And then you also have to remember Atlas Peak was on fire before all this started, and there were assets from Santa Rosa Fire headed that way that had to be recalled back. And they were sending sheriff, police, and fire into the hills to get people out when it hopped the 101 to get into Coffee Park. So it was something that was just such a freak occurrence, and you can't really forecast that happening again because, I mean, it was so crazy. But in terms of building, yes, there are builders that are trying to, I mean, anybody that's been in construction knows that the smaller the house, the more expensive it is per square foot, just because it's going to be, if you're building them in the same manner, because you have all of the overhead costs that are going into a smaller house. And then, you know, you realize if you do economy of scale, build 10, 15, 50, 100 houses at once, it then starts to be cheaper for those houses as individuals. In terms of buying, I mean, there are people that are looking at modular homes. They're buying in bulk. Of materials. I don't know if that's actually happening, but there are efforts in terms of trying to survey the entirety of the area, or at least a majority of the area at once, grading it, getting infill. Because when FEMA came through and they took all the material out, they had to take a minimum of 3 inches out because it was deemed toxic. And then they do the testing to see if they have to go more. And so, in order to get that back to engineering standards for proper drainage and all of these other things, dirt has to be brought in and then graded and then tested for every individual lot. So if everyone's doing it their own way, it's got to get surveyed to find your plot lines, and then you've got to bring in the infill, and then you've got to grade it. And if you're doing this as an individual, it becomes this very like 18-point turn kind of thing, because you can't grade your neighbors, you can't do anything on your neighbor's side. So what we're trying to do is find ways that we can do that in bulk, so that we can, one, reduce the amount of disputes we have with stuff like surveying, where, you know, they say this, you know, the survey line's a foot this way. No, it's not. It's a foot that way. And then it's got to get resolved somehow. But also, it's a lot easier to go over 18 lots with a grader than one.
Again, Jeff Okrepke is president and chair of Coffee Strong. And we have one of your block captains, Jeff. Tricia Woods is going to join us now. And Tricia Woods lost her home in the Coffee Park fire and now is a renter and a small rental. She's a single mom, teacher, mother of three kids, and good to have you, Tricia Woods. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us about really how things are going now, particularly in, well, you were smart enough to call your insurance right after, the day after. How are things going on that score?
Insurance is complicated. It's certainly something I have a big learning curve on, but Coffee Strong is making that a ton easier with the sharing of information about all the residents, so that certainly helps.
What else? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's complicated. I'm learning now that I don't only have to work with my insurance company, but then I have to mitigate them and meet them in the middle with my mortgage company and the contractor. So all three have to work together to be able to get the funds released and rebuilt.
And the neighborhood group has helped. It's good to hear that. But you also got on the phone right away with your contractor. How did that work?
I did. I'm not a person that sits back and waits for things. So I knew as soon as my house was gone, there was going to be a long line of people jumping to buy, get contractors too. So I have a close family friend for years that's a contractor. So I immediately called him and I'm like, you're the guy. I need you. And so that worked out easy. He's a great guy and I know I can trust him. So that was the easy part.
How about your spirits? How about you and your kids? I mean, in terms of your state of mind after going through this trauma, really, which is what it is.
I'm optimistic almost all the time. There's definitely really tough days. Christmas hit hard. All the memories, the loss of every ornament my kids made, the stories that you tell when you put an ornament on the tree of where it came from and how you got it, that hit hard. Putting the trees up in Coffee Park, that helped a lot. The spirit that came together there helped a lot bring the Christmas spirit back. No, it's the silly little things. I don't mourn the loss of the property inside the house. I mourn the loss of the memories. The pencil lines on the door jamb that show your child's growth. Memorabilia from family members that are passed down through generations. That's the stuff that's the most saddening.
You're going to stay in Coffee Park, though?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't leave that community if I had to.
All right. Thank you. That's, again, Tricia Woods, who did lose her home in Coffee Park. And let me bring another caller on from Coffee Park. That's you, Karen. Good morning.
Hey, I'm here in Coffee Park today. Just wanted, I guess, quick, I had a question, but I mostly wanted to commend Santa Rosa and Jeff and the team that's just doing great, great work. I've been, like, I'm overwhelmed with the response to our little, I get a little broken up into our little neighborhood. You know, we moved here on purpose 9 years ago. We moved to Santa Rosa 20 years ago and picked out a little house in Coffee Park and just got really lucky to have. Sorry, I'm all emotional now.
I understand.
Well, our house is still standing. We're one of the few incredibly lucky people. But it's been really heartening to see the outpouring of support and love for our community at large, and then our little neighborhood on its own. And the teamwork and everybody coming together to sort of help each other has been really inspiring. So I did have a logistical question as well. About,
Karen, let me ask you to hold because I'm coming up on a break, and I appreciate your comments and do want to hear more from you. But I want to remind listeners that you are listening to the Forum program. We're talking with a number of guests, Robert Digital of the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, David Green, who's with the City of Santa Rosa, and also Jeff Okrepke, who is with Coffee Strong. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Let me go back to you, Karen. You had a question. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I know that the new housing being built is going to have sprinkler systems and updated piping and code. Everything has to come up to the new code. What is the city going to do in terms of increasing sewage outflow and water support, the sort of infrastructure in Coffee Park? That's, I know you talked about power lines earlier, but I didn't hear anything about the water lines, basically.
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. Let me go back, if I could, to you, David Guyon.
Sure. I think that's a question that comes up a lot, and I think the infrastructure, just so everyone knows, the infrastructure in the streets, the water lines, the sewer lines, those are adequately sized. They're sized appropriately to handle the proposed new development standards. We design those to handle the biggest flow, which is either a big rain event or a fire hydrant, somebody hooked up to a fire hydrant. The individual sprinklers, again, those are required to help give people additional time to escape from their home. It's something that California has put in place and is important as we do the rebuild. In addition, we are working with all the utilities. We've brought all the utilities together, Comcast, Verizon, PG&E, and we have everyone in one room looking at developing a joint trench, essentially a one dig policy, to put in infrastructure into one trench in this neighborhood, to bring new utilities, fiber, and other things to this neighborhood. So we do not want to lose this opportunity to refresh our utilities in that way. And everybody's on board. Everyone's interested in participating, and everyone's around the table talking about how to do it right and bring this neighborhood back the best we possibly can.
Doing it right, I presume, includes concern about health hazards, especially when you're going into septic systems and things of that sort.
Yeah, in the city limits, we're all on city services, so we do not have septic systems in this area. That septic systems do come up as an issue potentially in the county, and that's something that we're working with our county counterparts on. But within the city of Santa Rosa, these units will be connected to city services through our sanitation system.
Let me thank the caller and read a comment from Larry, who writes, regarding the rebuilding of the homes lost in the fire, specifically in Coffee Park, does the city have a master plan? Is the city requiring lot owners to build according to a specific uniform plan? If not, is each lot owner allowed to rebuild their home in any style that they prefer? David Guyon.
Yeah, so I think we talked a little bit about this earlier. The land use dictates essentially what you can put on those lots, and essentially it's a single-family home. We do not have requirements in terms of what that home looks like. Typically, neighborhoods have homeowners associations. So up in the Fountain Grove area, there's a number of homeowners associations that would work together to determine what the look and feel of those units are. In the Coffee Park area, those were designed without homeowners associations. So it isn't up to the individual property owner to design a home that they feel fits in with the community. There's options to add a second unit. That's if the site allows. People can downsize their home, make it smaller if it's something that they don't want a two-story. That's all up to the individual homeowner, and that's something that we're going to be working with each one individually as they come through the process.
I'm going to read a comment from a listener named Kent who says, perhaps there are some areas in northern and southern California where houses should not be allowed. So much money spent on saving structures while the larger fire rages. Sorry for everyone who lost property and life, of course. Jeff, let me go to you on this. Comments about, disallowing rebuilding in Coffee Park, how do they affect you and other residents as you see it?
This is where I take it a little personally, but that's our land. As David said, you can't dictate what I can do with my land as long as it's within code. Me speaking as the general homeowner, not myself, but I think the one thing, like I said, what a freak occurrence this was, is if you have not been to the Santa Rosa area and know the area that we're talking about, I beg of you to go to Google Maps and find the area and look where Fountain Grove is, and then look where Coffee Park is, and realize that to come through the wildland. In Fountain Grove area, to get to Coffee Park, it has to go through a commercial area with hotels, streets, a mobile home park, hop a 6-lane highway, go through more hotels, more restaurants, more stores, through storage companies on both sides of Hopper, through an apartment complex, and then into Coffee Park. That's why I said it's such a freak occurrence. You cannot predict that. You cannot say that I know when there's another fire, there's going to be 70-mile-an-hour winds that are going to blow pine cones that are on fire hundreds of yards at a time. I think the estimate is this fire moved something like 200 feet per minute, about that. And, I mean, you can't foresee a fire moving like that, especially since the last one we had in that area took 5 days versus 5 hours. And so... It's our homes, it's our land, it's where we live, and the odds of this happening again are minuscule because it was such a freak occurrence. And to
Jeff, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, but I appreciate your sensibility and expressing it the way you did. Thanks to Jeff, thanks to Robert Digital, thanks to David Guillen, and thanks to Tricia Woods and you, our listeners. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.